We'll be continuing our study in the book of Hosea. If you want to turn there, we'll be looking at the 10th and 11th chapter this evening. I believe there's 14 chapters, so we're about through with this book. We'll start off by reading, as a reminder, originally the book starts off by talking about a man named Gomer, who is supposed to marry this harlot. And his relationship with her symbolizes God's relationship with the children of Israel and them leaving God and the covenant they had and following after the ways of the world and kind of bouncing back and forth. So we'll read the first three verses of chapter 10 in Hosea. It says, Israel is an empty vine. He bringeth forth fruit unto himself. According to the multitude of his fruit, he hath increased the altars according to the goodness of his land. They have made goodly images. Their heart is divided. Now shall they be found faulty. He shall break down their altars. He shall spoil their images. For now they shall say, we have no king, because we feared not the Lord. What then should a king do to us? So in verse 1, he's comparing Israel to a vine. He's saying this strong nation or this vine used to be strong, used to bear godly fruit, but it no longer was bearing godly fruit. He says, he bringeth forth fruit unto himself, according to the multitude of his fruit, he hath increased the altars. So he's saying that this fruit that he was bearing, this ungodly fruit, was building more and more altars and idols. I read one commentary where they said that they believed they weren't supposed to build a whole lot of idols, so they built a whole bunch of altars and didn't put any idols on them, but they would then worship the altars or worship these pillars that were supposed to hold these gods. But all that Israel was producing, all this vine was producing, was ungodly things. In verse 2, he says, their heart is divided. Matthew 6 and verse 24 says, no man can serve two masters. And here he's talking more so about following God or chasing after the things of the world, but, you know, there's only God and there's only things of this world. And the Israelites, they had the option to follow God and to do his commandments and they would be blessed, but they decided, it says they were divided. They decided that they kind of liked some other things that they had going, so they decided to do that. But Jesus says that you can't do both. You have to do one or the other. And this was an ongoing problem for the Israelites. If you turn back to the book of 1 Kings chapter 18, we see the same problem or mindset described. This is the story in which Elijah is confronting the prophets of Baal, and they're kind of having a competition, I guess, to see who can make this pile of wood catch fire and things like that. But in 1 Kings chapter 18 and verse 21, he says, and Elijah came unto all the people and said, How long halt ye between two opinions? If the Lord be God, follow him. But if Baal, then follow him. And the people answered him not a word. So here he's saying, how long are you going to be confused? How long are you going to have this divided heart? You know, if God is God, then follow him. If Baal is God, follow him. They don't have a response. And if you read throughout the rest of the story, you see that the prophets of Baal, they lose in the end, and God shows his power. But this was a common problem that Israelites had, was this division of their heart, them wanting to serve two masters. In verse 3 of Hosea 10, it says, for now they shall say, we have no king, because we fear not the Lord. What then should a king do to us? So there's going to come a time soon for the Israelites that they're going to realize that this king that they wanted, that they had asked for, was not going to be able to help them in any way. It wasn't going to be able to protect them from God's punishment. God had warned them about having a king and the problems that would occur with that, and they still wanted one. So God allowed them to have a king. He said, your time's coming when this thing that you wanted isn't going to be able to help you anymore. Now we'll read the next three verses. Hosea chapter 10, we'll read verses 4 through 6. It says, they have spoken words, swearing falsely and making a covenant. Thus judgment springeth up as hemlock in the furrows of the field. The inhabitants of Samaria shall fear because of the calves of Bethaven. For the people thereof shall mourn over it, and the priests thereof that rejoiced on it, for the glory thereof, because it is departed from it. It shall be also carried unto Assyria, for a present to King Jareb. Ephraim shall receive shame, and Israel shall be ashamed of his own counsel. I want to read verse 4 out of the NET. It says, they utter empty words, taking false oaths and making empty agreements. Therefore, legal disputes sprout up like poisonous weeds in the furrows of a plowed field. So here, what he's describing is their conversation. They couldn't keep their word. They kept lying to each other, and they would have all these weeds or these disputes and problems spring up in their life. Their word was no longer good. You know, it wasn't just the fact that they couldn't keep their covenant with God. They couldn't keep their covenant with their neighbor. And so all these disputes or weeds started springing up constantly. In Matthew 5 and verse 37, Jesus warns against this. And he says, let your yea be yea and your nay be nay. He's saying, if you say you're going to do something, do it. And here the Israelites, they, you know, may have had an agreement with their neighbor that they'd plow their field for money, and then they don't do it. And they'd have all, they couldn't keep their word. Verse 5, it says, the inhabitants of Samaria shall fear. Another version says, lament instead of fear. So they're going to fear because of the calves of Beth Haven, it says, or lament because of the calves. So again, they had these calves or these bull idols that they worshipped, and they were going to be destroyed once the Assyrians took them over. So again, all the faith they had put in their idols would be lost. You know, it's a constant theme. They put faith in the defense of their city and their king and their idols and false gods. And we see constantly throughout this book, he's saying everything you put your faith and hope in, you're going to lose it here pretty soon. And in verse 6, it says, referring to the bulls or the calves or the idols, it says, it shall also be carried unto Assyria for a present to King Jarab. King Jarab, that's just referring to all the kings of Assyria. It's kind of clumping them into one name. And again, he's saying this great god that Israel worshipped, Baal, or these calves, put so much faith into, now is going to be presented as a gift to another king. You know, if you have something that you or someone that you think is the greatest person in the world and they can do anything, and then that person or God or whatever is presented as a gift to somebody else, it really demoralizes that person. You realize that what you put your faith or trust into, you know, they weren't deserving of it. It brought, you know, Baal or their calves or their idols or whatever down to a lower level. It made them realize that they weren't worth anything in the end. Now reading verses 7 and 8 of Hosea chapter 10, it says, as for Samaria, her king is cut off as the foam upon the water. The high places also of Avon, the sin of Israel, shall be destroyed. The thorn and the thistle shall come up on their altars. And they shall say to the mountains, cover us, and to the hills, fall on us. I think in chapters 10 and 11 of this book has, in my opinion, some of the best, analogies or comparison to physical things. In verse 8 it says, as for Samaria, a king is cut off as the foam upon the water. Other versions, instead of foam on the water, it says a stick. But no matter which way you go, the analogy is still the same. It's saying, you know, if you see foam or a stick out on an ocean, you know, all the waves are going, you see the stick or the foam, it's there, and a wave comes up, and it's gone. It's just there for a brief second. And he's saying that's what's going to happen to your king. It's going to be there for a second, and it'll be cut off, or it'll disappear. And then the high places, in verse 8, it says, the high places also of Avon. Avon is short for Beth Avon, which means house of nothingness or idolatry. So this was a place where a lot of the idol worshiping and worshiping of Baal took place. And again, it was going to be destroyed. We talked about in the first few chapters, God or Hosea is saying that these high places will be destroyed, referring to physically high places, because they saw mountaintops and things as being closer to God or closer to Baal and things like that. So they thought there were these holy places. And it says the high places also of Avon. So all these high places they thought were holy were going to be destroyed. And it mentions the thorns and thistles again. Previously, in Hosea chapter 9 and verse 6, it says, for lo, they are gone because of destruction. Egypt shall gather them up, Memphis shall bury them. The pleasant places for their silver, nettles shall possess them, thorns shall be in their tabernacles. So again, it's talking about once they are wiped out and destroyed, all these thorns, all these bad things would come and overtake all these places that they once thought were holy. And then at the end of verse 8 in Hosea chapter 10, you know, once they're destroyed and this judgment or punishment is coming to them, it says, and they shall say to the mountains, cover us, and to the hills, fall on us. And these same phrases are used in Luke 23 and verse 30, and also in Luke 23, Jesus is actually quoting this verse, and then Revelation 6 and verse 16, similar phrases used, but all three scenarios are referring to a time when a certain people are going to be judged or receive some form of punishment and receive that punishment from God, and that punishment will be so great that they're just asking that the earth or the mountains would swallow them up. They don't want the punishment to come from God. They would rather just be enveloped by the earth than have to be dealt with by God. And then picking up in verse 9 of Hosea chapter 10, it starts to talk about, I guess, the thought process or the mindset of God. Hosea chapter 9 says, O Israel, thou hast sinned from the days of Gibeah. There they stood, the battle in Gibeah, against the children of iniquity did not overtake them. It is in my desire that I should chastise them, and the people shall be gathered against them when they shall bind themselves in their two furrows. And Ephraim is an heifer that is taught and loveth to tread out the corn. But I passed over upon her fair neck. I will make Ephraim to ride. Judah shall plow, and Jacob shall break his clods. Sow to yourselves in righteousness. Reap in mercy. Break up your fallow ground. For it is time to seek the Lord, till he come and rain righteousness upon you. Ye have plowed wickedness. Ye have reaped iniquity. You have eaten the fruit of lies, because thou didst trust in thy way, in the multitude of thy mighty men. So previously in Hosea chapter 9, verse 9, it talked about Gibeah being the place where Saul, their king, was, I guess, anointed or he was placed in the position of authority. He was anointed as their king, which helped in the destruction or the downfall of Israel. And he's saying since that time, since at Gibeah, when the bad thing started to happen, he uses the phrase that you stood there, you stood in them, meaning that you didn't try to get out of these problems, get out of the way of these bad things. You just stood there and let it envelop you and take you all over them. And then in verse 10, it says, is my desire, this is God talking, is my desire that I should chastise them. Other versions say discipline. So here God's saying, you know, I want to discipline you. I need to punish you. And then he says, and the people shall be gathered against them. And this is referring to against Assyria coming to destroy them, when they shall bind themselves in their two furrows. These two furrows, in the ESV, it translates it to double iniquity. And in the Holman, it translates it to two crimes. So these two problems that you were having, these two things you were committing against me, make me want to punish you, make me want to serve a form of judgment. One of the sins, we've talked about this before, but one of the sins that Israel constantly faced was the rejection of what would be called theocracy, which is just a priest ruling in the name of God. That's what God wanted originally, these people to do what they were told and to follow his commandments, and the priest to help out with that. And the other problem or sin was most likely thought to be homosexuality. We won't read the story, but in Judges chapter 19 and verse 13, we see a very similar story take place in Gibeah that happens in the land of Sodom. You know, in the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, an angel comes to Lot to warn him that he's going to be destroyed, and everybody in the town wants to meet the angels and have their way with them. And we see the same, pretty much the same story take place in the book of Judges. But it's thought to be that those were the two main sin problems that Israel was facing at that point. Verse 11, it says, and Ephraim is an heifer that is taught and loveth to tread out the corn. But I passed over upon her fair neck. I will make Ephraim to ride. Judah shall plow, and Jacob shall break his clods. So I had a general idea of what this verse meant, but I wasn't sure until I did some more research. But cows, they were used on the threshing floor. They would throw out all the some form of grain, and the cows would walk on it, and it would help to separate the seed out from the chaff and things like that. And in Deuteronomy chapter 25, verse 4, it says, thou shalt not muzzle the ox when he treadeth out the corn. So meaning when you have the cow out on the threshing floor, when it's treading out the corn or grain or whatever, there should be allowed to eat while they're walking. So, you know, if you were a cow and you had this job, you had it made, because you're walking on your food, you constantly get to eat. And so these animals were very large and had an easy life. And so God here is comparing them to a cow that has the job of working the threshing floor. It says that Ephraim is a heifer that is taught and loveth to tread out the corn. So Ephraim or Israel was this cow that had this easy way of life, this easy job, and enjoyed it. It says, by passed over upon her fair neck. And this means that he didn't put a yoke on them or make their job any harder. But now he says, I will make Ephraim to ride, Judah shall plow, and Jacob shall break his claws. He says, you know, you had it easy. You were working the threshing floor before, but you're not going to have it any easy anymore. Now you're going to have to go out to the field, and now you're going to have to plow. You're going to have to actually work, and you're not going to enjoy what I have in store for you. No longer was Israel or Judah going to have it easy. They were going to be put to work plowing and breaking up these clods. So verse 12, it says, again, continuing kind of with the farming analogy, it says, sow to yourselves in righteousness, reap in mercy, break up your fallow ground. So this is originally what the Jews or the Israelites were told to do. They were to, you know, spiritually sow in the fields, and if they obeyed God, he would, you know, as it says in verse 12, rain righteousness upon them. You know, if they did what they were told to, God would bless them. And we see that that did happen when they did follow God's commandments. He did bless them. But then in verse 13, we see that that's not what Israel did the whole time, and that's not what they were doing any longer. So instead of doing what God had told them, sowing righteousness and reaping mercy, as it says in verse 13, it says, you have plowed wickedness, you have reaped iniquity, you have eaten the fruit of lies, because thou did trust in thy way, in the multitude of the mighty men. So all these bad things, it says, you plowed wickedness, you reaped iniquity, you've eaten fruit of lies. So all these bad things were happening to them. And, you know, throughout this book, he never leaves the Israelites wondering, you know, where they goofed, where they messed up, what they did wrong. He says, all these bad things are happening to you because thou didst trust in thy way in the multitude of the mighty men. They trusted in what they thought was right. They, you know, anointed a king. They anointed a man as being the perfect leader and things like that. And they followed in his ways and they thought it'd be good. And that's why they were reaping all these terrible things. That's why they were going to be punished, because they had trusted in the multitude of mighty men. Now the last two verses of Hosea chapter 10 says, therefore shall a tumult arise among thy people, and all the fortresses shall be spoiled, as Shalman spoileth Bethrabel in the day of battle. The mother was dashed in pieces upon her children. So shall Bethel do unto you because of your great wickedness. In mourning shall the king of Israel utterly be cut off. So again, there was going to come this destruction. They had put all this hope into their fortresses and things like that, and there was going to be destruction come on those fortresses, and all these things would be destroyed. And, you know, throughout this book, as I've been studying, if there's a place or a civilization or something like that that I didn't recognize the name, I could do some research and somebody had some history on it. But here in verse 14, it says, as Shalem spoileth Bethrabel, nobody knows what these two places are or what it's in reference to. There's a few theories, but none that I felt you could put much stock into, but still the analogy or the story being told is the same, that there Israel is going to be destroyed. In verse 15, it says, so shall Bethel do unto you because of your great wickedness. Just like Shalman, or however you want to say it, in verse 14, destroyed Bethel, or this calf, or this pagan worship that was going on, was going to destroy them. The things that they thought were great were going to end up being their demise. And in verse 15, he says, even your king is going to be cut off. He's not going to be spared in this judgment. Now, the next four verses, we see, in my Bible, this chapter is titled God's Love for Israel, which is kind of ironic. You know, you go throughout the whole book and it's God mad at the Israelites and things like that. But let's read the first four verses of Hosea chapter 11. It says, when Israel was a child, then I loved him and called my son out of Egypt. As they called them, so they went from them. They sacrificed unto Balaam and burned incense to graven images. I taught Ephraim also to go, taking them by their arms, and they knew not that I healed them. I drew them with cords of a man, with bands of love, and I was to them as they that take off the yoke on their jaws, and I laid meat unto them. So now he's kind of, I guess, reminiscing, you might say, of how he originally helped the Israelites, how he helped them and guided them. You know, Israel was God's chosen people originally, but fell away, and the new Israel, or Christ, was going to be called out of Egypt. Verse 1, it says, when Israel was a child, then I loved him, and I called my son out of Egypt. I believe that when it says, I called my son out of Egypt, that is foretelling Jesus coming out of Egypt. We won't read it, but in Matthew chapter 2, verse 13, it's the beginning of the story of Jesus' life, and it's talking about Jesus in, or Mary and Jesus being called out of Egypt because they're scared of Herod. And I believe that's what it's in reference to here in Hosea chapter 11, verse 1. Verse 2 says, As they called them, so they went from them. The NET says, but the more I summoned them, the farther they departed me. So God's constantly calling for the Israelites to turn from their evil ways, but every time he called them, they would go farther and farther, deeper into their pagan rituals and cultures and things like that. Verse 3 says, I taught Ephraim also to go, taking them by the arms, but they knew not that I healed them. So here this is referring to kind of how a baby or a parent teaches a baby to walk. He's saying, I taught them how to walk. I held their hand, but they never realized that I was the one helping them. I was the one providing their food and the comfort and help that they needed in learning how to spiritually start their walk. And then verse 4, he goes back to the symbolism of the calf, or them being a cow. He says, I drew them with cords of a man, with bands of love, and I was to them as they that take off the yoke on their jaws, and I laid meat unto them. So he's saying, I led them around with kindness and love and these nice things. He has love symbolizing as a rope and things like that. He says, I was real nice to him. He says, I took the yoke off. You know, yoke is something we think of as a burden or a struggle or a job. He says, I took the yoke off or the trouble off of them, and then gave them meat, gave them the physical things that they needed. You know, if you continue with the analogy of learning how to walk and things like that, you know, he led Israel out of Egypt. He taught them how to walk, walked them out of Egypt. He lifted the yoke in that he destroyed the Egyptians. He destroyed Pharaoh and all his armies that was chasing after them. And he fed them, and he, you know, we see this, that he literally fed them with manna and provided for them throughout their journey in the desert. Hosea chapter 11, verses 5 and 6 says, he shall not return into the land of Egypt, but the Assyrians shall be his king, because they refuse to return. And the sword shall abide on his cities, and shall consume his branches, and devour them because of their own counsels. So again, verse 5, going back to the foretelling of the destruction, they were not going to return to what they might call their homeland or Egypt. They were now going to be part of the Assyrian civilization and be their slaves. In verse 6, it says, the sword shall abide on his cities. The sword or lots of killing was going to take place in the safety that they once knew. It mentions in verse 6, it says, and consume his branches, or consume the bars, referring to the city gates. You know, again, they thought the gates would protect them, that they were well fortified, but the gates would be consumed, they would be destroyed. And again, like I said earlier, you know, he never leaves them questioning what they did wrong, what their problems were. He says at the end of verse 6, and devour them because of their own counsels, because of what they're doing, they thought was wise and smart, and the good things they were trusting, you know, they're trusting their king and their priest that they had set in place. Because of their unwise counsel, that's why they are going to be destroyed. Verses 7, 8, and 9 says, and my people are bent to backsliding from me. Though they call them to the Most High, none at all would exalt him. How shall I give thee up, Ephraim? How shall I deliver thee, Israel? How shall I make thee as Admah? How shall I set thee as Zeroboam? Mine heart is turned within me. My repentings are kindled together. I will not execute the fierceness of mine anger. I will not return to destroy Ephraim, for I am God and not man, the Holy One in the midst of thee, and I will not enter into the city. Previously, I think it's in chapter 5, if I remember right, he refers to Israel as a backsliding heifer. And again, in verse 7, he says that Israel is backsliding. You know, he's saying, my people are determined in turning away from me, even though they think Baal is this, what he says is a call to Most High. They think this is where they're supposed to be going, what they're supposed to be doing. It's not going to protect them. It's not going to help them in the end. In verse 8, he says, how shall I give thee up, Ephraim? He's saying, what am I supposed to do with you? You know, I love you. I've helped you on your walk. I led you out of the land of Egypt. But again, I want justice to be served. So what am I supposed to do with you? In order for justice to take place, you're going to have to be destroyed. You're going to have to be punished in some way. You know, we think, well, he sent the Assyrians in and they wipe them out, put them into slavery. That's pretty good punishment. But in verse 9 it says, I'll not execute the fierceness of my anger. We see that, you know, God punished them, but he could have punished them a lot worse. We see the story of the flood and how, you know, he drowned everyone that wasn't Noah and Noah's family. In Deuteronomy 29, verse 23, it says, this is a story of Sodom and Gomorrah. It says, in that the whole land thereof is brimstone and salt and burning, that is not sown nor beareth, nor any grass groweth therein. Like the overthrow of Sodom and Gomorrah, Admah and Zeboam, which the Lord overthrew in his anger and in his wrath. And those are the same places that he's referring to in verse 8. He's saying, you know, I could have destroyed you like that. In these stories, he destroyed all the people that lived there, the buildings, and he even made it so the land wasn't fertile, you couldn't do anything with. He completely wiped them off the face of the earth. But here with the story of Israel, they're just placed into captivity, and their temples and houses are destroyed, but they still have their lives. So in verse 9, he's saying, this punishment I'm going to give you isn't going to match how upset I am with you. He was going to destroy everything the Israelites knew, but it would not completely destroy them as a civilization. Even though they deserve the same fate as Sodom, which is to be destroyed with fire and brimstone, he was only going to allow them to be enslaved. Verses 10 and 11 says, they shall walk after the Lord. He shall roar like a lion. When he shall roar, that the children shall tremble from the west. They shall tremble as a bird out of Egypt and as a dove out of the land of Assyria. And I will place them in their houses, saith the Lord. So I believe, again, this is starting to foretell the new covenant, Jesus coming, and the things like that. And here he's saying God's power is going to be shown soon, not only because Israel is going to be destroyed, but Jesus will be coming and performing miracles and showing God's power, and the people are going to recognize this, recognize the power, and begin to obey God and his word. In closing, in verse 12, it says, Ephraim compasseth me about with lies, and the house of Israel with deceit, but Judah yet ruleth with God and is faithful with the saints. So here he closes out again, annoyed at Israel. He's saying, Ephraim has lied to me, Israel is deceitful, and Judah is still worshiping these gods or saints that they think is holy, worshiping these pagan altars or idols. And so that's how he ends chapter 12 or chapter 11, kind of trying to explain himself, saying, you know, I love you, you are my chosen people, but you still have to be punished. And again, throughout the book, he's giving them reasons why they're being punished, what they did wrong, what commandments they broke, and things like that. So that's my study for this evening. I hope it was beneficial. I know it was kind of longer. Like I said, I enjoyed the symbolism in these couple of chapters, and really like how he writes and how he compares what's taking place during that time to everyday things that people today can still understand. As always, we offer an invitation song. If there's one who needs the prayers of the church, would like to be baptized, if you come forward while we stand and while we sing.